Eileen, thank you very much indeed. You're very welcome back to the programme. Tonight we're going to discuss what it's like to be a gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender teenager and to be bullied because of it. We're also going to ask why in 2014 schools can still legally discriminate against teachers because of their sexuality. With me in studio tonight are Niall Callan, a member of the INTO's LGBT teachers group. He teaches at Skullmail Ruin Junior Primary School in Talla in Dublin. Michael Barron is here, and Michael is the founding director of Belong To, a support group for LGBT young people here. Patsy McGarry is religious affairs correspondent with the Irish Times, and Leslie Fitzpatrick and Patrick Dempsey, who are both 21 and who have both experienced homophobic bullying in schools. You're all very welcome to the programme. Michael, I'll start with you. You had a launch tonight for the Stand Up to Homophobic Bullying. It's the latest. You've been doing this now for a number of years. Is it possible to say how widespread the problem is in our schools at the moment?
Yes, I think it is. It's very widespread. And the last survey that we carried out showed that most LGBT young people were experiencing homophobic bullying in the region of 60%, and also that in the region of 80% of teachers themselves identified homophobic bullying as a problem in their schools. So I think we can say that it's pretty widespread, endemic actually, I think you could say. And I think it's something that a lot of work is going into at the moment. I think we're making a lot of progress on it, but it is a very big issue that needs a lot of very concerted effort.
And that effort, how poor has it been up until now, would you say?
I think that we've really only started to address. We've been working on this now for 10 years, but I think we've only really had very widespread institutional support for the last 3 or 4 years. So, for instance, in the last 2 years, the Department of Education under Minister Rory Quinn have been very supportive. So, the Stand Up campaign that you mentioned is now co-sponsored by the Department of Education. So, it's a Belong To and Department of Education campaign. But I would say that even 5 years ago, that absolutely wouldn't have been possible at all. You know, so I think we are making progress very quickly over the last couple of years. But I think when we started Belong To first, we never intended to get involved in working in education, to be honest with you. We set up as a youth group to provide support for LGBT young people. But very quickly, what became apparent was that the problems they were experiencing in school were so severe that we really needed to do something about it. And that's how we ended up in there. And in the early days, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of support, you know. So I think the change that's happening is only happening in the last maybe 2-3 years.
And you've described it tonight as endemic, and indeed your executive director is quoted as saying it's the most common form of harassment experienced by young people. Is that really the case?
Absolutely, yeah. And also I think in recent years we've heard an awful lot about cyberbullying, which is a huge issue, you know. So a lot of young people can experience bullying in school, then come home and experience it online, and it's a really big issue. But actually, if you look at what the content of cyberbullying is, like what are the terms used, what's the motivation behind it, I think you'll find that also most cyberbullying is actually homophobic in its content as well, you know. And I think to get to the bottom of it, we really need to ask ourselves some really big questions about how we teach young people gender in particular, you know, how we teach young boys to be real young men and how we treat young women or teach young women to be women. I think that's where the hub of homophobia really comes from. It's a big project. There's a lot of work to be done.
And we will talk more about the campaign in detail in a little while. But I want to come to Patrick and to Leslie, because you've experienced at first hand homophobia, bullying in schools. You're both 21, so you're both out of the secondary school sector. But Leslie, first of all, would you describe for us what it was like for you at secondary school when you came out as gay and the bullying that you experienced?
Well, obviously I was 12 going into the secondary school setting. I kind of started getting bullied kind of as soon as I went in. I kind of went in as the nerd and stuff. So it wasn't necessarily because I was gay, I was being bullied, because at that time I didn't know what I was. I wasn't emotionally mature enough to know what I wanted in life and stuff like that.
And you were at an all-girls school?
Yeah, I was, yeah. So it was kind of one of those things, you're in the changing room and little sly comments would be passed and you'd get kind of paranoid and stuff. And it was kind of then that I started to realise, okay, maybe I am gay and maybe what they're saying is true. And
what were they saying to you?
You'd get comments, so your typical things like, oh, you dyke, or my name's Leslie, so oh, Leso, stuff like that. Or if you're in the changing rooms, are you staring at me and stuff like that? And it may not even be directed exactly at you. It'd be very subtle in a way, but even the subtle stuff, it made you feel so bad about yourself and just hate yourself essentially. So kind of that started at 12, as soon as I went in.
But you had no idea what they were talking about.
Looking back now, I can say that around 7 or 8, I kind of started to realise. But at that age, I didn't know what it was, so I wasn't able to realise that at the time. But I did at 12. I kind of did know. It was only when I started getting bullied that I realised what it was. And the only kind of the only kind of representation I had of what I was negative, because what I was getting told, are you gay, are you dyke? It was in a negative way. It was always, there was nothing positive for me to look at and be like, that's something I can relate to. So I only came out when I was about, kind of started to my friends about 14, 15, and then to my parents, it was either 15 or 16, I can't actually remember. So it took like about 7, 8, I started to realise it took that many years for me to actually come to the understanding of what it was. And it was only through bullying that I actually did understand what it was. So like I even got suspended from school because of fighting with a girl that was bullying me. So like it was all negative, like everything about my being gay was negative, because I was getting suspended for standing up for myself, for being bullied because I was gay. Like, you know, that it was, everything I was getting was always negative. Mm. And that played into the 6 years of my secondary school kind of life. So
once you came out to your friends and your family, were they supportive?
Yeah, my friends that I initially told would have been, because I knew they would be. Obviously, like, I trusted my friends. It was a couple I would have been a bit more kind of hesitant to tell, because I knew that they had kind of these ideas about what gay was and maybe not mention certain things to them. Most of it, what I got was positive. And my family are very positive as well. Like, I knew they wouldn't have like thrown me out or whatever like that, but it was still scary to come out. Like, it was still like, you have to kind of question, why was it scary if I knew they were positive about it? But I did, once I did come out, it was positive. I did get a little bit more comments kind of thrown, because I would have been like, I would have been kind of stereotypical, kind of a bit butch at that age as well, so kind of people genuinely just knew. I still got comments passed about me in class and stuff like that, but because my friends then knew I was gay, I would have had them stand up for me a little bit more. But it was still a kind of a struggle to kind of get through the 6 years. I was constantly kind of making sure I wasn't acting a little bit too gay, or kind of maybe don't go getting changed in the change room with them because something will be passed. And like, it was good and bad, both. It was kind of best of both worlds, I suppose.
As Panty Bliss said, you're checking yourself.
Yeah, like that's, I so relate to that, because when I was that age, I did, and I even do still now, like in college. But at that age, I was like, am I coming across too much? Am I looking at her? Did I pass a comment here? I was constantly asking myself, am I making myself a target? Like, I was constantly asking myself that, and kind of having to go through that for 6 years, it's a long time. Like, that is, like, looking back now, it was like probably the hardest time in my life, you know. And I didn't necessarily get like full on homophobic bullying, like it was just general bullying, but homophobia was brought into it as well. Like, and I think that happens for an awful lot of straight people as well. Things like, oh, you fag, or stuff like that. Those comments are thrown every day, and you don't necessarily have to be gay to be, have those comments passed about you, you know. And that's something we really need to question in our schooling system and in society in general.
Exactly, the negative connotations. Yeah. I was going to ask you, when you came out, after you came out, did the bullying get worse?
Not necessarily worse, no, because I'm quite a confident person. Even though I was being bullied, I am quite like out straight about things. I'd say how I feel and stuff. And I did, like, as I said, like, I did get suspended. I think after that, people realised I wasn't just kind of going to sit there and take it. Didn't necessarily get worse, but it didn't subside either. Again, as I was saying, it was quite subtle, so it may not have been as out straightforward. But like, I remember one day I went into school and one of my friends turned around to me and says, oh, they were talking about you in that class, they were saying about how you're gay and stuff. And I was like, that's not necessarily bullying straight to my face, but that's still something that I was like, oh no, like, I'm being talked about, I'm, you know, like. So it kind of changed to more kind of that sort of stuff. And I kind of, as again, I was 15 at the time, so I was getting a bit older, it became more stuff that was like kind of on the streets as well, like going out for lunch and stuff, you'd have like comments passed rather than in class bullying, I suppose. So like, it was kind of, it did and it didn't, it just changed. I think it was because people kind of like, they couldn't pick on me for something I was being confident about, so they done it a different way. So.
And Patrick, you're listening to that. Presumably you can identify with a lot of that as well. For you, you were driven out of school by bullying.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us what happened?
I suppose when I kind of realised when I came out to my family and stuff that I was gay when I was like 15. And when I started school from first and second year, before I'd even kind of come to terms with my sexuality and stuff, I was getting comments in school saying, oh, you're gay, or you're this and that. And people were kind of making comments as I was walking by in the corridor. And it really started off very lightly like that, and people picking out these differences that I didn't really know myself. And I always asked myself, why are people picking me out for being gay? I don't even know if I am gay or not. And then it kind of got to the point in third year and fifth year where it started getting a bit more severe. It started becoming daily, where I was getting a lot more severe comments. I was always being targeted on the corridors. I was hearing homophobic comments in classrooms, in front of teachers, and sometimes gesturing by teachers.
What do you mean gesturing by teachers?
As in, kind of, you know, trying to kind of give an impression of a gay person or a lesbian person to kind of overemphasize the kind of masculinity or femininity of a man, like, or a woman.
The teacher was doing this?
Yeah. Okay. And then we had, in fifth year, I was beginning to get threatened as well with physical assault. And I kind of had to start changing my route in on my walk home. I had to start walking. I lived like 5 minutes away from school and I actually had to take a longer route home. And then that kind of happened and it was beginning to become more of a daily occurrence. And very often it was happening. And then in sixth year, I had gone on an immersion project to India and I'd gone with a very small group of people. I thought, oh, this is going well, this is all good. And I had then had a scrapbook, which I was going to show young kids that I was teaching over there, to just kind of show them about my life and how my life is in Dublin. And my scrapbook was, they went through my bag and actually completely went through my scrapbook and graffitied on it.
The like kids who gay. Were with you, the students
that were with me. And when I'd gone back to the school, I'd kind of questioned the school about why exactly this was allowed to happen. And I knew that the teachers knew that this was happening, and not just to me, but to other students in the school. And I'd also raised why Belong To stand-up posters were not being put up on the walls. And I was told very point blank behind the scenes from one of the teachers, one of the staff, that the staff of the school had actually voted against putting the posters up and had based that kind of decision based on ethos of the school. And so soon after all of this was happening, I decided that I kind of just wanted to leave school, because at that point I was being late for school. I was taking too many sick days just because I didn't want to go into school. So that was kind of my gist of my experience. It kind of just started off really gradual, and before I even knew I was gay, and then, you know, it really became very severe.
So what would you say the effect was on you, whether physically or psychologically?
Well, when I left school, I was completely frustrated and angry. I was angry at how let down I was let by the school. The school did completely let me down. I felt angry and frustrated that people were allowed to get away with the comments that they had and that they were so uninformed. That it was taking place in an environment that should have been completely safe for me to be in. And of course, there's the aftermath that it actually made my progression through education and the education system far more difficult. I really had to worm my way around the system to start to get somewhere, which is not something I should have had to do. Like, I'm kind of at the start of a degree now. I should be finished. And that's kind of that's a definite, you know, knock-on effect for me.
Leslie, did you get much support from your school?
I did, yeah. Well, obviously, like, schools in general in Ireland aren't the best for any form of homophobic bullying, like, policies or whatever. But again, my bullying was quite subtle homophobia. It was just bullying in general. So I did get support. There was good policies in place for dealing with homophobia in general. I had really good support from certain teachers as well. Like, that just really helped me get through it and helped me with my situation. I don't think it's at the standard it should be, though. I think there's an awful lot more they can do to target specific areas of bullying. Like, I think homophobia is just one area. I think it can go to other areas as well, but for me, it's specifically homophobia. I do think they did enough for me at the time. I think they did the best they could, I suppose. They did the best they could in accordance with their bullying policies. I think it can be improved on, though, because I did find my 6 years incredibly difficult, and there was many a time I wanted to leave and I just didn't want to be there. Like, I was lucky enough, I did have support from very, very good teachers, like, that just loved their job and stuff. So I suppose they did the best they could at the time. They could do better, though. So,
Niall Callan, Niall, you're welcome. You are a member of the INTO's LGBT teachers group and you're a teacher at a primary school in Talla. Is it an issue in primary school?
The homophobic bullying? I think that's something that people are often quite confused about, because, you know, like we've all been talking about already, people tend to be in their teens when their sexuality becomes apparent. And, you know, so we deal with children in primary school who are 12 years old and younger. But what there is still that language, that all pervasive language is everywhere. This is gay. That's gay. I teach second class children. Sometimes their lunches are gay. It's this negative word, that's gay, that's gay. That girl plays with boys. That boy plays with girls. They're not the right kind of boy. They're not the right kind of girl. Now, none of those children might ever grow up to be lesbian, gay, bisexual or transgendered. But they're still being bullied. And you don't have to be gay to be the victim of homophobic bullying. Mm-hmm. If you want to bully somebody, because you don't like their face or you don't like the way they walk, gay is a really good reason, because you'll always find someone who'll go along with you. So those things do happen. And I think in primary schools as well, something we need to remember is that whether a child is, let's say these children have not realised their sexuality yet, but when, like Leslie and Patrick, when they're older and they do realise their sexuality and they are feeling that real helplessness, which I felt when I experienced homophobic bullying myself, are they going to look back on their whole school career and always see the teachers ignoring the word gay because they don't really know what to do with it? Or, like we have in classrooms up and down the country, there's a child who might be 7 or might be 9 and their brother might be gay or their granny might be gay or their auntie or uncle, and they're hearing this hurtful language. So like I say, you don't need to be gay to be the victim of homophobic bullying. But yeah, it does occur, definitely.
And when Patrick there talked about the teachers engaging in homophobic language or gestures, does that shock you at all?
It does shock me, because if you're a teacher, you're supposed to have gone into your career to protect children. You know, and I know not everybody is in the right career, but it is shocking. And I hope anybody listening is shocked by that, that somebody who was vulnerable, who was a child like you were, had to put up with that treatment from an adult who was in a position of trust. You know, that is really disgusting.
And you say you suffered homophobic bullying as well, and it stays with you, doesn't it? It forms who you are.
It definitely does. It's probably the reason why I'm sitting here today in a studio talking about being a gay teacher, when legally I can be discriminated against, you know. But I've been through being bullied and I'm over it, basically. You know what I mean? I'm not going to pretend not to be a gay person, because I feel that the bullying I went through, that was me fighting for the right to be able to say that this is who I am. And it's my business, you know.
I'll come to you in a minute, Patsy, but I just want to go back briefly to Michael. And Michael, I mean, none of this is new to you. You listen to this and you've heard all of this before. And Leslie and Patrick suffered awful abuse and so on. Other people who are gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender, a lot of it is even worse for them in the sense of the effect on them. I mean, many of them are suicidal, they attempt suicide. It's horrific for a lot of them.
Absolutely, yeah. No, and I think this is really important, and I think this is why we really got into this work, was because we were working with young people who were experiencing homophobic bullying, and then we were also working with young people specifically who are self-harming. And I suppose when we realised this and we realised there was a connection between the two things, is how we got involved. But I think it's really important to say, and I think maybe you've said this already, that when we talk about mental health and LGBT young people, just to be really clear, that LGBT young people experience mental health difficulties because of the homophobia they experienced, not because of their identities, just so we make that kind of difference very clear. Yes, again, like research would show, very, very shocking stuff, like 50% of LGBT young people under the age of 25 in Ireland have seriously thought about ending their own lives, and 1 in 5 have actually attempted suicide. And it's research carried out at the Children's Research Centre with the National Office for Suicide Prevention. There was 2 correlations there. One was that family rejection, so LGBT young people who were rejected by their family, were more vulnerable towards self-harm and suicide, and LGBT young people who experienced homophobic bullying were. So, I mean, very simply put, homophobic bullying puts young people's lives at risk. That's how serious the issue is.
And are these young people, are they of a secondary school going age? I mean,
you're talking 13 to 18 or whatever. Yeah. Also, we know now that the most common age at which a young person realises that they're LGBT is 12. So that's when they first kind of have a good sense of themselves. But that the most common age when they come out is 17 and a half or 18. And of course, that maps across all of secondary school, really. So most LGBT young people are aware but not out in secondary school, primarily because they make the very wise decision that it's not safe for them to come out in secondary school. So that would also kind of show you why doing this work within the secondary school system particularly is really important. And actually, it's going back to primary school, I think, is where we also really need to start in terms of normalising LGBT identity. I mean, ultimately, we're talking about an identity that's stigmatised, and stigmatised in all manners of way with the gender stuff that we're all talking about. But I think if we were to get to the root of it, we really need to be talking about sexual and gender identity at a primary level. Yep.
Patsy McGarry, a hard question, perhaps, Patsy. I mean, why? Leslie and Patrick were at school about, what, 4 or 5 years ago, but it's still going on today. Why in 2014 are people still being bullied in this country because of their sexuality?
I can't answer that question, Audrey. Hmm. What I can answer it probably is why gay teachers are discriminated against in our educational system in Ireland. Under a provision of the 1997 Act, Section 37 allows schools to discriminate on who they employ on the basis of ethos. And this applies to all schools, not just Catholic schools. The Catholic schools are the vast majority in our primary sector, about 93% of schools in the primary sector are controlled by Catholic boards of management. But there are Protestant schools and there are Muslim schools. And at both primary and secondary level, they are allowed to discriminate to protect their ethos. And of course, according to their ethos, practicing homosexuals are not basically employable people. This man here, this brave man here beside me, Niall, could be fired for speaking the way he has in this programme tonight by his school. Mm-hmm. It's a Catholic school, I take it. A Catholic-run school. Well, if it was Protestant, it would be the same thing, or Muslim, it would be the same thing, or Jewish. I mean, Judaism tends to have a much more relaxed attitude to this subject. But, I mean, today in Ireland, that is, in my view, intolerable. That it is legal to discriminate against a minority in our society, a much beleaguered minority in our society. And really, it is about time that it was addressed by our lawmakers. And it is a positive sign was our Minister for Education indicating at the INTO conference last year that he was prepared to do something about it. And even more positive, more recently, we had comments by Archbishop Jim McMartin on this week interview last Sunday week, where he was extremely sympathetic to gay people.
We can actually hear that, and I'll play it now, because as you say, Patsy, he was on this week programme talking to Richard Crowley, and he was asked about for his reaction, I suppose, when he heard John Lyons and Jerry Buttimer, both TDs in government, and they were speaking in the Dáil at the height of the debate surrounding homophobia in light of Panty Bliss's comments, etc., about the abuse that they had endured.
The gay community in Ireland has suffered enormously. You know, when I heard the debates in the Dáil, you know, what do I say when I hear somebody spat at them? That's a horrendous thing to happen to anybody. When I meet with young people, you know, at the age of 15, 16, one of the questions they inevitably ask me is, why is the church against the gays? You know, the difficulty that a young man or woman feels, you know, as they come to grips with their own sexuality.
One of the central figures in the debate so far, Rory O'Neill, said that there's a little bit of the homophobe in all of us, including himself as a gay person, and with respect, he would have included you, I guess.
Yeah. Anybody who grew up in Ireland will have told jokes which were pointed at the gay community, at travellers. I mean, it's part of the culture we grew up in, and but we have to grow out of it. And, you know, in general, you know, it's the person who's offended who defines what being offended is. You know, if we say, well, you shouldn't be offended because I said that to you, it's a borderline, but we have to create a culture.
So if a lot of gay people say the church, the Catholic Church, is guilty of homophobia, are they right?
I think if we all have elements of homophobia, you know, that is a thing we all have to cleanse our memories and but simply to say because of that the Catholic Church is homophobic, or that somebody who is
a little bit homophobic, perhaps?
People in the Catholic Church may be homophobic. But certainly the teaching of the Catholic Church could be used by some people in a homophobic way.
That was Archbishop Diarmaid Martin on This Week a few weeks ago. Pat, you think the slight change in tone there?
Well, certainly. I mean, he is known to be pastorally very compassionate towards gay people and on the ground towards the gay issue himself. And indeed, I'd have to say that would probably be the disposition of most church leaders in Ireland. I mean, no church promotes discrimination or bullying or hostility towards gay people. Sure. None of them do. But in fact, because of the teachings and because of some of the language used, not least by the previous Pope, Benedict, when he talked about homosexual people being objectively disordered with a tendency to moral evil, which is a shocking thing to say about any person. That sort of language did encourage homophobia. And it did encourage those who were involved in homophobic bullying, either in a slight or superficial or trivial way. That language hasn't helped at all.
So if they don't promote a discrimination, sorry, Patsy, how then does that tie in with Catholic-run schools? Did they lobby for this opt-out of the European directive?
they lobbied for the legislation in the first place, and then for the opt-out in 2000 from the European directive to protect their ethos. In other words, in terms of lifestyle, the lifestyle of the teacher must be compatible with the ethos of the school. But, and that's an interesting one too, by the way, because that would not only include gay teachers now, it would include divorced teachers, it would include civilly married teachers, it would include single parent teachers, it would include cohabiting teachers. So you're talking about a huge swathe of teachers. For instance, between a fifth and a quarter of marriages today in Ireland are civil marriages, they're not church weddings. Between one in three births today in Ireland are to single parents. So, I mean, this is a much bigger issue than the gay issue, but it's probably at the gay end of things it is felt most acutely.
So how enforced is that act? I mean, how many, is it known how many teachers are not employed?
We don't know for a fact, but I mean, the point is what it does do for people who are not compliant with the ethos, whether it be through sexual reasons or cohabiting reasons or whatever, it creates a basic sense of insecurity. I heard a story of a girl who was a single parent, actually just repeated in another interview by Aidan O'Riordan recently. She went into her school, she had become pregnant, and the first thing she asked her principal was, will I be able to retain my job? I mean, that shouldn't happen in the Ireland of 2012. But can I make another, just to come back to figures that Michael was talking about earlier on, and I think this is really compelling, and it's something that was highlighted by President Mary McAleese many occasions about what young gay people, and in particular, with no offence to Leslie, what young gay men go through. Seven times more young men die from suicide than young women. It is the biggest killer of young men in Ireland today, way ahead of road accidents, although single vehicle accidents are probably believed to be suicidal. And it is believed that quite a number of the suicides of young men are related to their inability to deal with their sexual identity.
Niall, you want in?
Yeah, I'd like to thank Patsy for mentioning section 37.1, first of all, in your article in the Irish Times a while ago, because it really is an issue that a lot of people do not understand, and they don't believe when they find out that it exists. They go, that can't still be on the books, let alone it's actually not an old law. It's actually quite recent. And when Patsy was saying there that it's not just a gay teacher's issue, we had a press release come out from the INTO today where the INTO president congratulated the LGBT group for an award we won recently. And he said that the INTO, so the entire Irish National Teachers Organisation, is pushing for the repeal of Section 37.1. Because it can be used against you if you're cohabiting. It could be used against you if you were a single parent. And it's not just a school either. It's an institution with a religious ethos. You're talking hospitals, doctors, nurses, janitors. And the huge problem with Section 37.1 is that it's vague and it's unnecessary. Its vagueness says if you undermine the ethos, and that's why we're talking about all these different groups, because who knows what that actually means? And it's unnecessary because I work in a Catholic school. I applied for a job in a Catholic school. That is the job that I applied for. That is the job that I signed up for. Section 16 of the Employment Equality Act says that notwithstanding all of these 9 grounds of discrimination that you cannot discriminate against, it says we're not going to make you employ somebody who's not going to do the job. OK, so if I turned up at school tomorrow and decided I didn't want to teach Irish, well, of course I should be disciplined or dismissed. If I turned up at school tomorrow and said I don't want to teach maths, of course they shouldn't have to employ me. But what Section 37.1 is not talking about what I'm doing. It's talking about who I am. It's not allowing me to be judged solely on my actions, which is everybody's right in their employment. It's judging me on who I am. It's kind of implying that there's some reason that I'm just not right for that job. Mm-hmm. That there's something about me that's just not right to be a teacher. And that's why it's such an unpleasant and unnecessary piece of legislation that shouldn't exist. And can I just address, when we were talking there about the figures of how enforced this is? Well, there hasn't been a case of a teacher in a permanent position being dismissed using Section 37.1. But I'll give you a few examples that people in our group have experienced.
Niall, how many, has there ever been a case of a teacher being dismissed full stop?
Well, that's a different
that's another issue. but it highlights probably why this hasn't happened in this instance either.
Like, okay, for example, I'm here today because I teach in a Catholic school, but I teach in a Catholic school where the staff of my school fully support me and fully recognise that there is absolutely nothing about me that can prevent me doing my job. I, in church today, did not prepare my second class for First Holy Communion in a different way to the teachers on either side of me. Okay? But other teachers don't have that same experience. We have a member of our group who, when it was discovered that she was gay, was told, well, you're lucky you're a woman. If you were a man, I wouldn't let you set foot in the door of the school again. Those were the words of a principal. We have another member of our group who was in temporary employment. And this is a situation where this will come in effect. It's not just dismissals. You're talking about not having contracts renewed. You're talking about not being promoted. This particular lady had been on temporary contracts, so maybe taking maternity cover here, taking resource position there, for 4 years, rolling contracts for 4 years in a Church of Ireland school. And when it was discovered that she was gay, the next time it came up for renewal, it wasn't renewed. And when she asked for a reason, she was told that they felt she had more of an educate together personality and that it would be better for her career to concentrate on those sort of schools. That is what Section 37.1 does. Imagine in any other career, somebody thinking it was okay to say that to you. Okay to imply you couldn't come in the door of the school. And what Section 37 does is that when teachers experience that discrimination and when they experience that bullying, they can't challenge it.
That's what I was going to say. And that's what I was going to point to you, Patsy. In your article, you talked about talking to teachers who wanted to be given a different identity because they didn't want to declare openly that they
were gay. I mean, they were afraid to. And it's a good point that Niall made there too. It doesn't just apply to teachers. It applies to people employed in church-run hospitals, whether they're, again, whether they're Catholic or Church of Ireland-run. I mean, those are the only two we have in Ireland, hospitals run by those two churches. Yes, I mean, there's still a great fear out there. That's what this man, I asked him, how you get away with it? He's identifying himself by name on this programme tonight and going public about it. I mean, he has therefore placed himself potentially in a very vulnerable position. And he could be fired, and they will be within their legal right to fire him under the current law, which is outrageous. It is legalised discrimination funded by the taxpayer. And I mean, that is the way it is. The people that I quoted in the article were just afraid, and understandably so, to be identified by other than their first names. And one man gave the example and about he was with the same movement in the INTO. Said that when it comes to bullying in general, he can deal with it. He can sympathise with the child. He said there's not a thing as a bad child. The Father Flanagan motto, you know, not a thing as a bad boy or girl, I'm sure. The man who founded Boys Town. But and he could reason with the child. But when it comes to homophobic bullying, he, as a gay man, has no entree there. He has to stand back. And who could understand it probably better than himself? But he can't get involved because therefore his own sexuality becomes a factor in the whole thing. So he has to withdraw.
Exactly. How can we expect a teacher to be able to challenge homophobic bullying when they are working in an environment where their sexual orientation might actually put them in risk of being fired? That's actually creating a potentially unsafe environment for young people, and it's creating a situation where homophobic bullying might be left unchallenged.
And in fact, it's going as far as well, in our experience, blocking teachers from teaching certain parts of curriculum, for instance, an SBHE curriculum. So I think it's LGBT teachers themselves, but actually it's going as far as teachers who aren't LGBT as well, fearing talking about LGBT issues, fearing combating homophobic bullying or supporting a young person to come out, because the fear is that they're undermining the school ethos by doing that. But actually, I think a really important point to make as well is that there's a big contradiction here as well. In certain parts of Department of Education policy don't necessarily line up with Section 37.1. So, for instance, the department's own action plan on bullying, published last year, clearly states that a school's religious ethos cannot and should not be a barrier to providing a working environment or a school environment that welcomes LGBT students and teachers, or that allows for the combating of homophobic bullying. So there you have a Department of Education policy that directly contradicts Section 37.1 as well. So I think that's another reason to kind of go, look, it's nonsensical at this stage.
And I should say we did invite Minister Rory Quinn to take part in tonight's programme, but he wasn't available. And Niall, I mean, he's been 3 years in office now. And as Patsy says, he said last year at the INTO conference that he was committed to repealing this article. Do you think, is he up against some strong lobbying still from the sector?
Well, I think Minister Quinn has been trying his best. He's been trying his best in a lot of ways. It's probably unusual to hear a teacher supporting the Minister for Education during recessionary times. But, you know, he has pushed through anti-homophobic bullying guidelines that all schools are going to have in Ireland. And that is something that we must acknowledge, because it's not something we probably would have expected to see 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. The problem we have with Section 37.1 is there's been lots of things happening there. Avril Power brought forward a bill to amend it, and that was pushed to one side so the government could have their own bill to amend it. The amended bills, in the INTO's opinion, are absolutely inadequate. There is no amendment. There's only repeal. Even with amendment, you are still judging me on who I am, not on what I do. Currently, that amendment bill is with the Equality Authority. And I spoke to a member of the Equality Authority last week, and I was told that they've received more submissions on this issue than any issue the Equality Authority has ever dealt with. And they were very polar opposites. So yes, I think you're right that there is some very major lobbying to keep this discriminatory piece of legislation. And like I said, it's unnecessary, because a teacher is not going to not teach. Mm. They're not going to teach something that they're not supposed to teach. They're not going to do that. And if they do, you already have the power to say that you are not doing your job. Why you need this other thing to say, we just don't think you're right. You have an educate together personality.
Audrey, I mean, the opposition that there is covert, as indicated there by Niall. I mean, these people who are going to, with their submissions to the Equality Authority, we're entitled to know who these people are, and they should get up there and put their argument like everybody else. If they're afraid of the reaction, well, such is the way things are today. This is discrimination. What is fascinating is that homosexuality was decriminalised in Ireland in 1993, and 4 years later this Act was introduced and allowed on the basis of ethos, the preservation of the ethos of a school. I mean, it didn't make sense then, and it makes far, far less sense now. And there would appear in other gay-related issues to be consensus across all the political parties. For instance, gay marriage. There seems to be consensus across all the political parties. This is, if you like, a lesser issue. And you'd imagine that the political establishment across the board, I mean, Avril Power and Fianna Fáil, Éadan Riordan in the Labour Party, I mean, Jerry Buttermer in the Fine Gael Party, I mean, all those people would support this provision. I mean, you'd imagine there'd be cross-party support. It shouldn't be such an ordeal, therefore, to repeal this Act.
Mm. And Michael, back to your job in terms of supporting LGBT young people and protecting them in school, does that make your job harder when you see this state-sanctioned discrimination still existing at the top?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, actually, to pick up on something that Patsy is saying, I think it's really clear that in the last 10 years, particularly, the Irish population has become extremely open towards LGBT people. I think, by and large, we're very fair and decent people, you know, and polls on gay marriage, for instance, or various equality issues really show that over and over again. So it's just this very strange and unnecessary, actually, loophole almost, it feels like, within schools. But I think it's also important to note that we're coming from, I suppose, a very long history of institutional homophobia in Ireland, a very long one. And it's been nowhere more so than in education. And again, if we just remember that fact that 90% of primary schools, roughly, and roughly over half of secondary schools are still maintained by the Catholic Church or by Catholic religious ethos, that is a very odd situation to be in, isn't it? I mean, that is unlike any other Western country, you know, and I think that that's probably where the nub of this is all coming from, isn't it? I mean, if the population as a whole think that being LGBT is perfectly fine, if the population as a whole think no young person should be bullied for any reason whatsoever, and then this loophole still exists. It's a structural problem.
Just for the sake of clarity, point out that the Catholic Church isn't the only church that has a problem with this issue. Currently, sure. The Church of Ireland is tearing itself apart over the gay clergy issue.
Absolutely.
At a local level and at an international level as well.
Absolutely. Because I do think that sometimes what we've noticed in recent months, or particularly, that the whole area of gay rights has become this debate around gay marriage, you know, and I think it's very convenient for it to be kind of, to just have this argument that's either you're either for gay marriage or you're not. Mm-hmm. But actually, if we're looking really deeply at what are the structural problems around LGBT young people's, people's full equality, I would say the education system is the single biggest problem that we experience in Ireland.
There's another issue here. Sorry, Audrey.
I'll just bring Leslie in. Yeah, would course, you agree with that, Leslie?
I would, yeah. there's a point I wanted to make. It's kind of like, fair enough if a school has a certain ethos, but you have to understand that if you have like 90% of the schools in Ireland, you have a responsibility to teach the children that of our country. Your teachers are responsible to teach the children of this country. You shouldn't discriminate about anything in someone's lifestyle. Like, you as a school, you're taking on that responsibility, so accept that and don't discriminate. Like, if the rest of your population of this country aren't homophobic or aren't transphobic or anything like that, then why are you enforcing this? When you are taking on that responsibility, you should be held accountable for what you're doing. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Patrick?
Yeah, like, I suppose that's the thing that it's a really important point to make, is that we might look at this as a church issue and an issue around discrimination and LGBT people. Teachers have a responsibility to ensure that schools are safe environments for all young people. Mm. That should be a be-all and end-all for all young people, not just LGBT, but travellers, all young people.
Yeah.
And I suppose Michael just touched off the issue around gay marriage and the debates we've been having recently. I think it's very important that we ensure that those debates are being conducted in a very respectable way, that's ensuring that there's a positive and honest discourse. Mm-hmm. But we need to keep in mind that there is always young people listening and reading, and that they are really seeing this issue, and they're, you know, in recent months it has become a bit of a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to ensure that there are young people who are at risk and who are isolated, who are coming to terms with a sexual orientation or gender identity, who need to see positive discourse.
Leslie.
It's a point again, like Patrick made, like when I came out, it wasn't just me coming out as gay. It was me accepting that, one, I can't get married in this country, and two, I'm not able to have a family that's legit, like, recognised by our government. At 15, I had to come to terms with that although my brothers and sister were allowed to have that and we were raised the exact same, I wasn't allowed that. And, like, when you're hearing all these debates and stuff, again, I didn't have anything to relate to. There was nothing positive in the Irish media to say what you are is okay. The only thing I was hearing was negative. You're not allowed this, you're not allowed that. This is what the school is doing, this is that. You have to be aware of that, because as straight people, I think straight people tend to forget that they have this privilege. You are surrounded by what you are constantly. I'm not, though. So you need to be able to push this positivity that, okay, what you're doing is all right. Who you are is okay. You are allowed to exist in this country and have equal rights and stuff like that. And people need to be more aware of that when they're speaking about it on the media or to kids, especially primary school kids. And it comes back to the thing of, oh, that's so gay. That could be the first time a child could hear the term gay, and you're using it in a negative way. You need to be aware of these things when you're dealing with people in general, because you do have a privilege and you need to kind of check that privilege at times, just to be aware of that when you're speaking about these things.
There are a lot of contradictions in our education system around this at the moment. And one of the ones, like Leslie was saying there, when it comes down to bullying, we have these anti-homophobic bullying guidelines coming out now. But Section 37.1 is stopping teachers, and we're not just talking about gay teachers here, it's stopping all of the teachers from tackling that in a way, because they don't know what to say. If somebody, a reaction that I'm afraid quite a few teachers will have, if they hear one little boy calling another one gay, saying, oh, don't say that, like as if that's bad.
Yeah.
So you've just reinforced there the message that is a bad word. And a lot of teachers just don't know how to deal with it, because they're not sure how far they can go. Mm. They're not sure what they can say. And that's a big contradiction, that we're bringing in anti-bullying on one side, but we're not really thinking about how that ties up with the tied hands that teachers gay and straight have under Section 37.1. And then in all of our schools, regardless of their ethos, if you trawl through school websites and you look for statements of ethos and mission statements, particularly primary schools, you will be hit with the same phrases again and again, which are always, we aim to create an inclusive school. We aim to create an inclusive school. Respect, diversity. And that is, as primary school teachers, that is honestly what we're all about. We're dealing with very small children. We recognise that there's a lot of diversity in Ireland today. And we do try and promote that diversity to make each of those children feel valued, because that is our job. But on the other hand, we're telling the teachers to be afraid, to not be visible, to not say who they are. So it's a massive contradiction, and it's to the detriment of the schools, and particularly to the detriment of the children, I think.
Mm. Michael.
Yeah, I think Niall's really said something really important there, and that's that I think, and we believe, that education has the power to transform. You know, I mean, education in of itself should ideally be about teaching and supporting children and young people to be independent thinkers, to accept and celebrate diversity. I mean, it's this enormous power there, you know. And I think what we have at the moment, because of Section 37.1 and because of other institutionalised homophobia, is that our schooling system has allowed the opposite to happen, you know. But I think it's a really key thing to keep in mind, though, that although the education system at the moment has, you know, increased homophobia in certain levels, or has allowed homophobia to flourish, it also is the answer to it as well. You know, I mean, the education system could be the thing that ends homophobia in Ireland. You know, if we could teach young people and children from a very early age to genuinely accept diversity, and for the schools to reflect the very real diversity outside the school gate, that actually is the answer. More than gay marriage is the answer. That is actually, in the long run, what will change our society for LGBT people.
In the current situation, I mean, it is also the case that Section 37 can encourage the bullying of gay teachers, particularly at secondary level, where, you know, kids in school, teenage kids, they suspect something is going on and they pick at this whatever. And if it comes to issues of sexuality, they will not restrain themselves either. And their colleagues are inhibited by the actual fact that they're not supposed to know this man or woman is gay. And so you have this climate created where you have a very vulnerable teacher who may be gay, but can't obviously declare the fact, and is suddenly subject to all this tirade of bullying from his or her students. Yeah. And there's no control over them either. I mean, the current law foments that particular culture, which is there.
And come back to you, Michael, and, yes, you know, it's a contradiction again. You were saying, you know, that you believe Ireland today is its most open it's ever been, most tolerant, most accepting. Mm-hmm. And yet, on the other hand, you say homophobic bullying is endemic in schools. Mm-hmm. Where, going back to that question, why in 2014, where is that coming from?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. I mean, I think I don't know the entire answer to that, to be honest with you, but I think that we are coming from an education system that has traditionally been far more conservative and far more controlled than society as a whole does. And again, I just want to go back and say, from our experience, and we've worked with a lot of schools around the country, there are schools with a Catholic ethos that do an incredible job at supporting LGBT young people. It's not as black and white. Maybe I made it sound earlier, so I'm sorry about that. But I think that we have an education system that is far too controlled, doesn't allow for independent thinking, has a very strict notion of gender, has a very kind of strict notion of how a young man should become a man, how a young woman should become a woman, and also has this religious ethos bias that's there. All of that together has allowed homophobia to thrive, I think, within schools. And it's not genuinely reflective of how open society outside of school gates has become.
It's not either genuinely reflective of the ethos itself. Mm. I mean, Christianity is about anything other than exclusivity. It's about inclusivity. Yeah, and how this emphasis, if you like, or this absolute obsession with sexuality crept in is worthy of a study in itself. But there's no doubt that it is the case. And I mean, the churches in general, I mean, they seem to struggle with this issue of sexuality. And it is one of the reasons why they've alienated so many young people. The young people have moved on. Young people today in Ireland are used to, I mean, anybody under 30 can't conceive of a society where homosexuality was other than legal and other than, well, I won't say normal, because we're still going through the normalisation process. And then they come up against an institution that talks like this about gay people, their friends or whatever. I mean, there's such an utter contradiction there. And so it has contributed to the falling away of practice from religion, particularly from Christianity, whether it be under whatever its manifestation here in Ireland.
Mm. Leslie, do you think that, you know, we're talking about this now in 2014, do you think in future generations, in 40 years' time or whatever, people will look back on the way society in Ireland deals now with LGBT people and, you know, talk about how black people were treated 40, 50 years ago and say to us, how on earth was that allowed to happen?
Oh yeah, like I can't wait to get older and being like
don't be in a hurry.
I only turned 21, God. I know, I do. I honestly, I think in about 40 years' time, or even less than that maybe, we're going to look back and be like, what the hell were we doing? Why was this such an issue? Like, I genuinely feel that, like, it kind of comes back to this, you can't keep teaching old dog new tricks. The next,
try.
Well, you can try, and I do truly believe in trying really hard, but, like, you can already see in primary schools and secondary schools that, like, introducing kind of alternative lifestyles and stuff like that is becoming a thing. Like, these kids are growing up with this being a normal thing. Now, it has a lot further to go with it, but this is becoming a normal thing. Like, it's only kind of older people and the older generation that have an issue with this. Kids don't, as you're saying, like, kids don't have an issue with this. Mm. Like, they will only have an issue with this if you let them have an issue with this, if you push that onto them. Like, they only know what you let them experience. Mm. So,
yet they have the negativity, they have the negative stereotyping, yeah, and all of that.
They only have that because we give them that. So, if we're introducing things like stand up into schools, they're getting this positive kind of look on what being gay or trans or whatever it is. Mm. So it's not going to be an issue in 20, 30 years. There will still be homophobia and there will still be transphobia and all the other obias and isms, but it won't be as big of an issue. It's more so the older generation that are causing that issue, you know. So 40 years, it's going to be nothing. We're going to laugh at it.
Former President Mary McAleese has said that in time, people will look upon the attitudes that are prevalent or have been against gay people, not only in Ireland, but elsewhere in society, and compare it to the attitude to the Jews before World War II. Mm. That they were a minority, they remain a minority, who were victimised, they were scapegoated throughout 2,000 years of Christian history, and it led to the Holocaust. Don't forget, by the way, that gay people were also gassed, and people tend to forget that in the concentration camps. And indeed, within the Catholic tradition, there was a line in the Good Friday liturgy which referred to the perfidious Jew. And that wasn't dropped until 1961. So we're not too far removed from that sort of discrimination against one sector of society. Here we have another sector of society, and I can see in time the sense of what Mrs. McAleese has been saying, that we will, that the gay people in our society are the Jews of today.
Do you agree, Niall?
Yeah, I think when we look back in a few years, we will be surprised we were ever talking about these issues. Not to forget that not so long ago, there were teachers bringing cases to the Supreme Court because they were at danger of dismissal for being separated. And that's really recent. That's just before the divorce referendum came in the early 90s.
Her job because she was living with,
you know, and I mean, that's shocking for us now. It seems like it's something that didn't happen, you know. And I hope that that's the way things will be in the future. I think the key for all of this is visibility. Yeah. You know, Harvey Milk said, come out, wherever you are. Because he said that if everybody, you know, if people realise that they know somebody who's gay, they don't even have to be their best friend. It might be the teacher in the school. Mm. It might be the lady in the shop. It might be the postman. But then there's none of this mystery about it, none of this kind of vague unease that is that really subtle form of homophobia that people, I think now, because we live in a country that in many ways is so accepting, we kind of don't think of that as homophobia. Homophobia is what happens in Russia, it's what happens in Nigeria, it's what happens in Uganda. But it isn't really. Homophobia is that just vague unease that some people have around gay people. And they don't know why it is. Mm. And it's because they don't know a gay person. It's because they might not realise their next door neighbour is a gay person. Mm. And that their life is just as boring and ordinary and
hopefully not
as yours, you know. And I think that is the key. And that is part of the reason we have developed a lot as a country has been because of visibility.
And I think that credit must be paid to such courageous figures as the two Cusack brothers.
Yes.
Donald Logue and Connor, whose interview was absolutely hilarious. A comment came out. Not only was I not the only gay in the village, I wasn't the only gay in the family. But the visibility of such men where gay boys are concerned has to be a positive influence.
And huge. I think it's important to pay tribute actually to all the young teenagers, LGBT teenagers who are coming out, and there are thousands all around the country. And I think that's really transforming the country as well. Very often without the role models, you know, without the teachers are the role models, or local bakers or anybody else as a role model, they're still choosing to come out. And it's incredibly brave, and they are actually transforming their schools and their communities, and they should really be applauded for it as well.
Yeah. Leslie.
Actually, in Belong To You, I'm part of the women's group specifically. And I'm one of the older ones in the group now, but when I started, I would have been about 16. And, like, it was mad for me to be coming out at that age. And now there's girls in the group that are, like, 13, 17. 14. Yeah, and they're so like comfortable in what they are, and I'm like, I wish I could have been like that when I was your age. I wish I had the confidence to do that. It's just, it's actually kind of inspiring as well, you know.
Well, Leslie, people like you inspire that confidence.
Oh, thank you.
That's why they are. I think as well with the stand-up campaign, I think the incredibly important thing about stand-up is that it's actually not just about young LGBT people opening up, but it's empowering people and their friends to actually support them and creating that positive environment where young LGBT people and heterosexual people can kind of work with each other and be friends with each other and support each other, just as they should. To come back to your comments earlier on around suicide and the high rates of male suicide that Mary McLeese has said on many occasions, I think a lot of that does come down to what Michael was saying around gender roles. And we've had this very closed notion that young men, you know, they can't talk or big boys don't cry instilled from such a very young age, which is very dangerous. It's very dangerous when a young man or a young woman can't open up and just talk about these issues. So it's fantastic that Stand Up is creating an environment where young people are actually able to talk about the issues.
Leslie, do you experience any homophobia, any bullying now?
Well, I'm currently studying sports, so I'm in quite a male-dominant area. I wouldn't say I've suffered from like proper homophobic bullying, but you know, comments will be passed, especially in a very male, like as the lads are saying, you have to be a real man and masculine, blah, all that stuff. So it's like, oh, you fag, or you this, you that. It's more so other comments being passed to other people. I'm kind of just sitting there going, like, what? Yous are in your 20s, like, come on, this isn't behaviour. You should be kind of, it should be allowed, and it's happening in class and stuff like that. And like every now and then things will be passed about me because I'm a lesbian on the course, so I'll just tell me about your life. Like, it's kind of overly sexualized in like who I am and stuff. So that'd kind of be what I'd experience. Again, it's not necessarily like I'm getting beaten up or anything, but it is kind of subtle homophobia, kind of subtle kind of gender-based things as well. Like, I'm quite heavily gender-based, so I kind of have to face that every day in college. So it is tough, but I'm quite confident, so I can kind of tell them to pipe down.
I can imagine.
Look, it's been a great discussion, and thank you all very much indeed for coming in and taking part tonight. Just a reminder of who my guests were: Niall Callan, Michael Barron, Patsy McGarry, Leslie Fitzpatrick and Patrick Dempsey. Late Debate is back at the usual time, 10 o'clock tomorrow night. Until then, from me and from all the team, good night.